Welcome to the Milk Bottle Shopify e-commerce podcast, brought to you by Milk Bottle Labs, one of the world's top-rated accredited Shopify experts. Our founder, Keith Matthews, interviews Shopify folk to share as many Shopify tips and tricks as possible. This podcast is kindly supported by our two favorite Shopify tools we install in every store, Rewind.io and Klaviyo. Rewind is the leading backup solution for Shopify stores. Let's just say it's the cheapest insurance policy you'll ever get for your Shopify store, protecting all of your valuable data. And Klaviyo is our preferred automated email solution and is trusted by over 65,000 brands worldwide. Keep listening. We have some special offers for our podcast fans. Now over to your host, Keith Matthews.
Hey folks, welcome back. I am delighted to welcome Bjorn Forsberg of Forsberg Plus 2 to episode 57. Bjorn has created a suite of Shopify apps that are loved by over 75,000 Shopify stores worldwide, including Orderly Emails and Orderly Print, which we install in pretty much every store that we enter. I first met Bjorn back in 2016 when he was gracious enough to fly over to Dublin to one of our first Shopify meetups, and he presented and we had a beer after, and I have to say that myself and Peter have been big fans of Bjorn ever since. So Bjorn, welcome. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks. Nice and busy for November as usual, but what an intro. Thank you. It was great flying over to Dublin. I really enjoyed that. So I appreciate you guys letting me speak.
That's nearly six. It's 5.5 years ago, I think. I think it was March or April of 16.
How time flies.
And a lot has changed since, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. It was actually my first speaking gig, I remember. So I was super nervous. But been working on apps still since then. So it's been good.
Good, good. Tell me, how does an Australian man end up in Denmark?
Yeah, love. But originally it was with work. I was over here for some work with a company I worked for before. And just sort of really enjoyed the place.
Bjorn, I lived in Australia for a few years. The culture is very, very different. Obviously, you're there 15 years now and you're used to it. But do you miss the Aussie lifestyle? I mean, everybody talks about the Aussie lifestyle, but do you miss it, or do you get a Crawford, or do you go back often enough to just to kind of tip your toe back in the water?
Well, my family's still in Australia. I'm lucky enough to have a brother that's in that decided to live in Sweden as well. So he's not that far away. But the culture is definitely different. But I find the mentality of Danish people to Australians actually quite similar. They're very open, talkative. Yeah, and like to have a laugh, you know, like they're pretty relaxed sort of type people. So, I think I, you know, had to get used to living in a different place, a different rules, and, you know, everything's sort of done, how would you say, properly here. But the mentality of the actual people is quite similar to Australians. So I feel quite at home. And maybe that's, you know, 15 years of experience talking, but I've always enjoyed it over here. But Australia's, you know, obviously we try and get back every couple of years, all of my parents come over and visit us here. But, you know, now with COVID, it's a bit difficult. You can't do it at the moment. But hopefully we can do it again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we record this, the US have just opened their borders. So flights out of Dublin and London are now heading across to the States. So, so things are slowly changing for everybody. Last comment I'll make on Denmark, isn't it a great location? I mean, you can pretty much drive to anywhere.
I think that's what I really loved about coming to Europe. You know, if you're in Australia, you're in Australia. It's a long way to anywhere. So you generally like travel within the country. From here, you know, we've driven all over the place. We've gone to Amsterdam last year and, you know, just recently drove to Germany for a weekend, and you know, it's just around the corner, which is amazing. It's not something I've grown up with anyway.
I think it's something that Europeans take for granted. You know, Ryanair is probably in business maybe 20, 30 years. They have introduced generations of people to countries that normally they never, ever get near.
And especially like summertime, you can, you know, a 3-hour flight and you're somewhere super sunny, you're down in Greece or something, 3-4 hours, I guess. But it's amazing.
So you're sounding as if you're well settled anyway after 15 years.
Yeah. I think I'd have a tough time moving back to Australia. You know, I feel comfortable here, so I'm happy. And obviously, we've got our kids in school and everything else. So.
Yeah. Okay. Look, I'm intrigued in terms of how you got... Well, I'm always intrigued by when I talk to people to understand exactly how they got into Shopify and exactly how they found Shopify. Without going through too much of the boring bits of your banking career, I think you shared a video on Twitter last year about... A promo video?
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
You were working in banking. I'm interested to understand... number one, how you found Shopify, because you found the other side of Shopify. I found Shopify in terms of the capability for to build a business in terms of an agency around it. But what you did was you actually saw the opportunity to actually build a developer agency around it. And you couldn't code. So two questions for you. How did you find Shopify? And how did you go from your 9-to-5 in a bank to developing some of the most popular apps in the Shopify ecosystem?
Yeah, oh, what a nice way to put it. But we just had our first child, and I had paternity leave from my banking job. And it was an investment bank where they build sort of online trading systems. So it was a very technology-focused company. I started out in customer services, moved into sort of managerial role, and then finally moved over to project management. So I was getting closer and closer to the IT part of the business. And, part of my job was to sort of translate the business goals. We need this functionality, and then translating that into something that IT could build. I was getting into the process of building software without actually building it myself. And how I found Shopify was really, I was actually looking to start an online store. So we just had our daughter and we thought, oh, wow, I'd like to have a little side project. And I'll sell something. And obviously, when you've just had a child, you're always thinking about, what do they need? So we're going to get into like organic baby clothes or these engraved dummies that you can get with their names on them or whatever. So I was just researching that and I came across Shopify. And as I was reading through it, part of the trouble was we lived in a tiny apartment. It was like 59 square meters or something. The thought of having a warehouse didn't really fit well with our living situation. And then also, the amount of capital that you put out before you can sell something. Anyway, I noticed while I was researching Shopify that they had this app store and that you could basically build an app and have them market it in their app store. And then you could get customers that way. And at the time, it was, almost 10 years ago now. And there was a forum post there with a list of things that merchants were looking to have apps for, or that Shopify itself couldn't do yet. So they're looking for somebody. So I went down that list and sort of went, maybe I could build one of these, and sort of took it from there.
So was that a public forum?
Yeah, it was it's called communities.shopify.com. I think it's been renamed. I'm not sure exactly what it's called anymore. But it was just a forum post that was pinned to the top of the app section. So it was quite amazing that you could just sort of, look down this list. And obviously, I wanted to pick something that wasn't huge. So I saw that somebody was looking for an invoicing solution where you could select multiple orders and then have them print off. Shopify had a free app that would let you do one order at a time, but I thought, hey, it'll save people time by being able to do multiple orders at once. And that's kind of where the idea for Audley Print came along.
Now, you're talking about 2011. Was drop shipping popular at that time? Because that could have been another option if you wanted to go down the store route.
Yeah, I think it was, at least on my radar, it hadn't come on yet. So maybe it was just in its infancy, but I think that was a couple of years later.
Yeah. You're working in the bank. And I've been around those kind of roles before. So in actual fact, what you were doing was you were learning how to develop and how the processes worked, how the systems worked, even though, as you say, you weren't hard coding. So did it twig with you that you had some sort of a competency or that you were attracted to it and that you could probably do it?
Definitely. And I think the hard part was finding something that was small enough that I felt this could actually be an app that people will pay for. And at the same time, not too much for me to both have somebody else build for me with the budget that I had, and then feeling like, hey, I can actually understand this space enough without being a domain expert, I guess you could say. So yeah, that was kind of my criteria. And then I had $2,000 to spend and went and found a company online that specialized in small apps and had them build the first version. So my biggest job there at the start was really, designing all the screens and sort of explaining, if somebody clicks this button, what should happen? What should they see exactly on the screen? So it was an extremely detailed document, but that also means that you can give it to somebody else that then they can understand exactly what should happen when they're building it.
So effectively, you were building a requirements doc similar to what you would have been involved in anyway within the bank, and you were giving that to somebody else.
That was exactly what I was doing. Yeah. So I just took my template from work and did a similar thing for myself. And I maybe did it even more detailed because it was my own money.
Indeed. You mentioned $2,000. That wouldn't get you very much now, Bjorn.
No, I don't think so.
No.
I think, you know, their idea was also just create a little MVP for me. And then, of course, as money started coming in and I needed more features, I'd come back to them and say, hey, can you also build this? So, you know, I guess that was like V0.1. And then I started getting customers on the app, then you know, I'd reinvest that money into the app again.
So when did it launch, the first app? Was it 2012?
Yeah, beginning of 2012. I think it was February.
And at what stage in that process did you start to teach yourself how to code?
That was, I'd say a couple of years later. Yeah. So first I was just doing customer support during the nights. So I had this app and then, you know, if something didn't work like it should, I'd note it down and then send it off to the developers to have it fixed. So I was sort of a middleman, I guess you could say. It was my app, of course, but somebody else was building it. And to begin with, you know, you get a couple of customers, then you get a couple more and it slowly sort of snowballs, right? And I'd save up money and then ask for new features and send off that money. And eventually I got tired of sending them all my money. So I started, you know, making small fixes myself, reading books. And it was much easier because I understood what the app does. So I just had to read through the code to see how it does it, right? And then that's how I sort of taught myself.
That's a good reason to teach yourself how to code, Bjorn. You just said you were giving them all your money.
Yeah, exactly. So it was kind of a necessity, you know. At that time, that was a couple of years later, and I was using my evenings with young kids and everything else to sort of focus on this. So I figured I might as well start getting something for this work. I was working for free for a couple of years, I guess.
Yeah, we all did that, Bjorn.
Yeah, no, it was my apprenticeship, I guess you could say.
Yeah, absolutely. I heard a very good line one time, the best form of VC capital is your salary.
That's right.
Exactly. Yeah. Do the side hustle and work full time. So 2011, 2012. So at what point did you go full-time then?
That was in 2015. So I launched a second app about 6 months before, Order Printer Templates. And that was sort of taking off quite well and starting to generate pretty serious sort of income. At least I was basically matching my full-time salary on these side businesses. And I thought, if I can, you know, get it this far with a couple of hours at night, then what can I do if I actually go full-time on this? So I waited until, I was getting a similar amount of money from both my app business to my actual salary and then just transitioned over.
Yeah, it's funny. The way you describe it is actually textbook. Like, information is readily available now and startup culture is just everywhere and VCs are everywhere. And you're describing it very eloquently. But I think the bit that maybe we're not hearing is that it was tough work, wasn't it? And long hours.
Oh, absolutely. It was late nights and stressful times as well when, you know, in the Shopify app business, you sort of live off reviews. So you're always trying to do the absolute best you can and give people good service and everything else. But at the same time, you're sort of always worried about, you know, one or two people getting a bad experience and leaving a bad review, and that can have a huge outcome. So it's kind of a stressful journey, I guess you could say. You know, Shopify app business has grown since then, and the market for apps has grown hugely since then. And I think VCs and private equity have really gotten their eyes open for Shopify. So, you know, starting an app on Shopify now is maybe easier to get capitalized than it was when I did it. But I guess I've always been this sort of bootstrapper that wants to go at myself, you know, see where I go.
So Bjorn, there's over 4,000 apps in the App Store now, but like back in the day, back in 2012, but it kicked off in 2006-7. I don't know when the App Store started. It might have been around 2009 or 2010. Can you remember how many apps were in the App Store when you kicked off?
I believe there was under 50. Yeah, it was a single page, I remember. It was quite easy to rank towards the top.
It's all changed.
Yeah, it's all very much changed. And, you know, I have to give some credit to being, you know, a first mover there. Once you've built up a certain amount of reviews and installs and everything else, it's obviously easier to continue that trend.
I think, Bjorn, listen to your story, there's only one person deserves the credit. I mean, you know, you saw an opportunity, found the platform, outsourced it, double jobbed, and taught yourself how to code. I don't think there's anybody listening to this will ever think that anybody else deserves the credit. Listen, before we continue, let's just take a quick break for our sponsors. Rewind.io is the leading backup solution for your Shopify store. Did you know that there's no way of recovering lost data? If your store is gaining traction, app developers or multiple staff may enter your store, and there's absolutely no way of fixing human error. Rewind.io allows you to rewind your store back to its original state, so you can reduce your business risk immediately with the Rewind app. It's so easy, and it's the cheapest and best insurance policy you'll ever need for your Shopify store. Get your first month for free by simply replying to your first email from Rewind and mention this podcast. Now, regular listeners will know I love Klaviyo. It's the single biggest revenue generator I've ever seen across hundreds and hundreds of Shopify stores I've been in. Klaviyo's data-driven marketing automation platform is sophisticated enough to power those legendary campaigns from the big brands you admire, but they make it simple, they make it easy, and they make it fast. To get started with a free trial of Klaviyo, visit klaviyo.com/milkbottle. That's klaviyo.com/milkbottle. What I'd like to do is just talk about the apps. Is it correct to say that Orderly Emails is the most popular app that you have?
I'd say from installs, it's definitely the most popular. And it's a one-time payment app. So you pay for it one time and then there's no ongoing costs. Yeah. So as far as revenue goes for me, it's not the biggest app as such because you're constantly, it needs new customers to come on and it doesn't snowball the same as a recurring app. A recurring subscription app would.
So,
I'd say it's definitely the most popular. It's also the one I think I'm most proud of myself.
Well, that's nice to hear. So for the listeners, then explain the other thing. Of course, is that what you're doing is you're filling a gap in the platform. I refer to it on the podcast a lot as a platform gap. Shopify is not a perfect platform. I don't think there's any platform you could describe as perfect. And in actual fact, the beauty of Shopify's imperfection is the fact that you can come in with an idea and you can fix that platform gap. So, explain to our listeners exactly what Orderly Emails does, because it's very, very powerful.
Yeah, sure. So Orderly Emails is a design tool that you use to customize the Shopify notification emails. So that's like your order confirmation email, shipping confirmation emails. There's an abandoned checkout. There's about 30 plus emails that Shopify will send to customers at different times. So you can find the default emails in Shopify in the settings and then notification section. And that's where you see all the different emails. And the way that Shopify works is that they give you sort of a place to put the code of the email. They give you a default email template, but if you want to edit that, you need to be able to code it basically. And like you're saying, that's the power of it as well, because, you know, if they just gave you a small sort of what you see is what you get editor, then you're limited to doing what they allow you to do. Whereas now they give you a place to put code, then you can do anything. It's like similar to how their themes work. It's very powerful, but it does take some experience to actually be able to customize it. So Orderly Emails works in a similar way that the themes do, in that you can sort of browse our different themes for emails, the look and feel and layout of these themes. And then you can select one of those themes and customize it to suit your needs. And you don't need to touch any code. You can basically, you know, click type, add additional sections to your email. So you can add discount code sections, or you could show your recommended products, for example. But it's basically a nice, easy way to customize all your Shopify emails. You buy it for a one-time fee, and then you basically export the emails from the app and put them into Shopify. So Shopify continues to send all of your emails, and your Shopify works like it's always worked, but just now with much better designs that you can customize and improve yourself.
Yeah, so those for our listeners, those 30 emails are notifications, order notifications, refund notifications. So what Orderly Emails does is gives the brand owner, the Shopify merchant, the ability to brand those boring emails, I suppose you could call them, Bjorn. And it make just give them a look and feel which is professional, and matches the brand, which is, to me, it's just so simple. Which is why one of the reasons why we place it into every store. It still amazes me sometimes that merchants that are new to Shopify don't understand the fact that you have to do that. They just expect everything to match their brand, but nothing is as simple as it's supposed to seem, I don't think, you know?
And I'm not sure if it's my Scandinavian roots, but you know, I really like design. I like things to look nice and to match, you know, to give customer the experience of you've got a great looking site, but then you get these boring emails. You know, it's kind of a letdown when you buy something. You want the experience to sort of go all
continue,
the way through.
Yeah.
Same with like an unboxing experience or whatever. Yeah. So this is just a nice way to continue that great experience.
Yeah.
And yeah, I agree. You know, it's one of those things that's, it'll take you, you know, a short amount of time, and then you'll have it for the lifetime of your store, and you can update it as much as you want. So it, you know, it makes sense for people to do.
Yeah. So they're the emails that you're sorting out, okay? So app number two, Order Printer Pro. So what problem in Shopify does that solve?
Yeah, so that solves all your printed document needs. And that's anything from an invoice that you'd like to provide your customers after they purchase something. It can be something to help you pack your order, so a packing slip. And it's basically an app that helps you to print off these things quickly. It also has features so that you can automate part of that process. So you're not printing an invoice and putting it in the package, but instead, you know, adding a download link to the emails that they're receiving. So, you know, they get the shipping confirmation, for example, then they can just click, hey, download my invoice or receipt, and then they'll receive a PDF of that document. And again, you can sort of customize those with Liquid and so forth, so you can make them exactly what you need.
So I suppose you're saving on paper, which is everybody is conscious of now. The PDF goes out, and then the accounts department is quite happy that the invoice is properly presented for future use, I guess. And, you know,
yeah.
Again, it's something that's very, very simple, but very, very, very important from an operational point of view. One of the things that I've noticed about the App Store over the last few years is that there seems to be an obsession within Shopify, within the Shopify kind of merchant base, to obsess about apps that, you know, will sell more and will boost revenue and boost average order value. The interesting thing about these apps is some of them are excellent, and of course we all want to sell more, but the apps that you're creating are subconsciously helping people to sell more, because by using your apps, the merchant actually ends up having to do less operationally, which means they've more time and energy to spend gaining customers. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I think, you know, efficiency is underrated. You know, like
it's a good way to put it, actually.
Yeah. And, you know, we put a lot of time and effort into making things as efficient as possible, or that we can make things more efficient for a merchant. And, you know, things like automating what you can automate, I think everybody should do. And some people are still printing out things and you know, including them and so forth. But it's just wasted time and wasted paper and everything else. So I think
100% agree.
Yeah, I've always gone with apps that are sort of behind or after the initial purchase. I'm not sure why that is, but I've just always taken on that space. And I think I feel more comfortable there. You know, I'm not the salesy kind of guy, I think. And so my apps sort of reflect my personality. I like things to be efficient and automated and, you know, and look good at the same time as well. So I've always focused on that. And you can sort of put apps in two categories, the vitamins and the painkillers. Whereas I'm more on the painkiller, but with a splash of vitamin, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Because like you're saying, that, you know, a good email, not only does it tell them what they actually purchased, but it actually provides them information, you know, to give them a good customer service experience. Here, if you have any questions, click here. If you want to check out our returns, click here. If you need to see our newest products, you can see those as well. So I think improving the after sale experience is what we've focused a lot on.
Yeah, what you said is very important, because I mean, since Gmail kind of took over the free email arena, the truth is that people will search their emails to try and figure out or remember where they bought that last product, or where they bought that pair of, you know, I know that I do that. If I haven't, I wouldn't be a, you know, I don't buy things every day of the week, but there's times where you may only purchase something, you know, once every 12 months, and you don't exactly remember the domain of the store, and the fact that you can search your Gmail and then this beautifully presented email pops up, you know, which explains to you exactly what you purchased before. And then, as you say, you just click right back inside it then to go back to the store. So there's a longevity in it in terms of driving recurring customers as well. So, I mean, well done on it. I think it's the first two apps, I mean, are fantastic. If we go on to order printer templates.
Yeah.
What does that do?
Yeah. auto printer templates is kind of in the name. It creates templates for the Shopify order printer app. So Shopify came out with a free app, which, how would you say, it allows you to print off documents as well. But again, you need to know code to be able to customize those documents. And the documents that you get with the app are extreme, for lack of a kinder word, extremely basic, right?
Yeah.
So we sort of saw, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. It was kind of the idea. And so we thought, well, why not apply this thought of selling templates, but for their order printer app? And order printer was a super popular app. Obviously, it's free. So we created order printer templates, or I created it. And then, so again, you sort of pick from a design that you like. You can see different invoice designs, for example. You can take the one that sort of best matches the layout that you want, and then you can customize it with your brand. You can choose, you know, how you want the product sorted. Maybe that helps you with your picking. Lots of small little options that you can do to customize these documents without, again, touching any code. Then you purchase it for a one-time fee and then pop that over into the Shopify order printer app. So you've got your template customized, but you still use Shopify's order printer app to actually print the documents.
Yes. And then orderly print then is for busier stores, isn't it?
Yeah, it's geared. That's the last app and my first one. It's very much geared towards higher scale businesses or higher volume businesses, where, you know, it has more advanced sort of features like a picking list, where it will summarize what you need to grab from your warehouse. So say you've got 50 orders, it'll tell you across those 50 orders you need to get 4 of this product, 8 of this product, and then you've got everything at one time to fulfill those 50 orders at once. So you're not running back and forth from the warehouse for each separate order, but you do them sort of in a batch instead. So it's very much geared towards larger stores where they have a warehouse, or you know, efficiency is much more important than being able to print out a few documents. It also has exporting of order data, fulfillment, so you can actually push, you know, tracking information back into Shopify from the app. It's very much, I guess it takes part the best parts of the other apps and combines it into a single app with more advanced features. Is probably the best way to put it.
Yeah. Something that you mentioned earlier on in the interview was the fact that in the early days, and I know this was right through until very recently, you looked after all of the support yourself. And I remember reading app reviews in the App Store, and a lot of people pointed out the fact that this guy's support was absolutely fantastic. And I often wondered how on earth, as a single individual, you managed to get up every morning and go through all of those support requests. And the reason I say that is because on many occasions you have gone in and actually made code changes to the app for individuals and for store owners that we dealt with. And I suppose before we get to the solution that you had to that, just explain the scale of that, because at one stage it just became unbearable as your success grew. Isn't that right?
Yeah, it started out with, you know, maybe a half hour a day I could get away with. And then, you know, as the years went on, I was obviously getting more and more customers, and support was taking a bigger and bigger part of my day. And I started out in customer support at the investment bank I worked for. So, you know, I've done a lot of customer support. And so I guess I was, you know, it's something that I enjoy doing, to be honest. And I like to make people happy and to have a good experience. And I think the best feedback comes from your customers as well, right? So if, you know, you keep hearing the same request from different customers or users of your app, then maybe that's something you should take a look at and improve. And, you know, you guys have come with some great, requests on, hey, what if it did it like this? And that's how, you know, you can develop. So I always enjoyed being close to customers by doing the customer support. And I was doing it really up until early 2020. So I was basically doing everything. It was just myself up until 2020. And then I'd met a company called the Support Heroes at a Shopify event in Amsterdam. They had a little booth there and they were just getting started, I believe. And they were basically specializing in providing support for Shopify app businesses. And so I'd started a conversation with them. And then Corona sort of reared its ugly head. And then you know, for the online businesses, that actually caused more sales. And, you know, it had a positive effect within the online community, I guess you could say, which meant that there was a huge influx of new customers for the apps. And it was just you know, I wasn't doing anything but customer services. But luckily, I'd started the conversation with the support heroes, and then they got online a couple months after COVID sort of hit, and have been taking over most of it since. So obviously, they escalate things to me, and you know, I still sort of follow along, but they do the brunt of it now, which has been a godsend.
Yeah, I met them at the same event, Bjorn, and I don't know whether you had spoken to them already, but I actually, I told Alvaro to talk to Bjorn.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not looking for a referral fee, but you were the first person that I thought of when I spoke to them. And we actually had Alvaro on from Support Heroes earlier on in the year.
That's
and,
right, yeah.
It was just, it's just so interesting. He was talking to me from Medellin in Colombia.
That's right. Yeah, it's funny because I've just got some new artwork for my office, and I've decided to put up a poster of each of the places with people I work with, and one of them's now Medellin.
That's cool.
Yeah, was just to bring it a little bit closer. But yeah, lovely people, and I really enjoyed chatting with them at the event, and then just sort of continue the conversation from there. And it's been great because we've been able to sort of work on the service and find, okay, what service do they need to offer to make my life as easy as possible as well, right? It's rare that I meet a group of people that are so well organized.
Yeah,
it, hats off to them. They've been absolutely great. And then since then, I've also brought in the development help, and also my wife has joined the company. Finally, I talked her into it.
Yes,
and she's sort of helping with bookkeeping and marketing and branding. So we've got a big sort of brand update in progress.
So does that personally, does that give you more space maybe to think of other things? Does it take the pressure off you, or do you just find yourself as busy as you always were?
Yeah, I think it takes some of the pressure off, because before I was able to do a lot of things, but I would do them well, but not perfect. And now we can sort of spend time on perfecting a lot of the, or at least, you know, polishing and making things, spending more time on things that are important, and freeing up my time to also do sort of to focus more on strategy and where we're going and so forth. And a lot of this year has actually been around, you know, consolidating and building a stronger base to continue on from, because yeah, running four apps by yourself for a long time it's a good idea now to sort of clean up and polish that before we take on to the next steps.
And I suppose just before we go, Bjorn, I'm just interested to understand, Shopify recently launched Online Store 2, completely changes the landscape in terms of how Shopify apps are presented to the customer on the front end of the store. But over that, you know, since 2011, has there been many major platform changes? I know that the systems that Shopify have been using for developers have changed. So has that been a draw? Like, I suppose for the wannabe developers, what sort of changes have occurred over that period of time? And has that caused, like, separate to customer support, separate to updating the app, separate to coming up with new ideas, and obviously marketing and organizing, and as you say, bookkeeping and all of the other elements that are required to run an app, which is effectively a SaaS business. What has happened over the last 10 years in terms of the Shopify platform itself for you and developers?
Yeah, it's gone through, I mean, major changes, some easier to handle than others, I guess you could say. You know, obviously the admin itself has changed dramatically. I think it's gone through two sort of major iterations since. And one of the bigger changes was that they made apps embedded. They weren't originally embedded into the admin, so they'd pop out into a separate window and you'd use them like that, whereas now you have the embedded part. And that's been sort of an ongoing process to keep that up to date. Shopify does sort of change the way that they handle that embedded experience a few times, and every couple of years, I guess, would be the best thing. And that's usually a pretty major thing, so you got to plan ahead for that. Otherwise, it's been sort of changes to the App Store, which can have a pretty big impact on our business. If they decide to change the categories, if they change how the algorithm works in what gets recommended, that can have a huge impact. So there's definitely risk involved, but most of it is done to, or all of it is done to improve the merchant experience. And that's, you know, what we're also about. So usually these things are positive in the end, but change is always scary when it happens.
Absolutely. But I suppose last question on that then, Shopify will give you notice of changes, won't they?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they're very good at giving you a good amount of time. We've got a change coming up where they're deprecating an old way of, you know, running these embedded apps at the end of the year. So just working on going through that, but they've given us plenty of heads up and reminders and, you know, hey, here's guides and tutorials and things like that. So Shopify has always been excellent at ensuring that we can move along with change.
Yeah, communication.
I've never felt like, yeah. And sometimes, obviously, big announcements come out of the blue, and that's how any company is going to operate, I think. But I think they've always been done right by us. And obviously, they changed sort of their revenue model recently. And
yeah,
you know, they're looking for app developers to come to the platform and not to drive people away. That's their big motivation. And I think that's great.
It's been a wonderful time to talk to you. We will see you soon and we will continue to watch you grow.
Thanks very much. I look forward to it. Just very much like to say, I appreciate both your and Peter's support over the years. And thanks again for having me on.
Thanks for listening. All of our episodes are available on Spotify, iTunes, and Google Podcasts. A special note of appreciation goes to our sponsors, Rewind.io, the leading backup solution for Shopify store owners. Get your first month of Rewind for free by simply responding to any welcome email once you sign up for your free trial on Rewind.io. And of course, to the email platform Klaviyo, which helps Shopify brands easily create personalized, multi-channel marketing campaigns using your most powerful asset, your customer data. To get started with a free trial of Klaviyo, visit klaviyo.com/milkbottle. That's klaviyo.com/milkbottle. If you're a Shopify user with an exciting story to tell, reach out to the team on podcast@milkbottlelabs.com. Until the next time, take care.